Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Well, hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Kevin O'Neill. She's Jay-Z on the board. It's rainy morning as we had our fight our way through the Dunkin' Donuts. What was that all about, Jay-Z? The little almost fracas in front of us is the one lady stepped in line in front of everybody else. Did you?
Just rainy morning drama. People are grumpy.
People are grumpy, but you don't usually kick, step in front of a policeman. She did. No, boy, talk about entitled. Ew. Anyway, just the world we live in, Kevin. Just the world we live in. Entitled. Everybody's entitled these days.
But you know, one person's entitlement is another person's punch to the nose.
Yes. Well, I don't know. It used to be,
and I think we're well on our way to that.
I think we are too.
Kind of a world.
I think we're getting there. And anyway, we have all kinds of things happening this morning. S&P futures up 375. Nasdaq's up 6. I mean, Dow's up 6. We actually are getting a little bit of a. I don't think Boeing's getting hammered here this morning. I'll get it out in a second. But what do you make of this, Kevin? Is everything in the world politics now? About this plane and. Every other country in the world. Everything.
Is everything in the world politics? Pretty much, yes. But that's a pretty broad question. So explain a little bit, please. Where
well, how is it that we're standing behind this plane? And now, you know, I hate to single out people, but sometimes somewhere the big guy upstairs will, like, find you. You know, it's like... You know, if you have a position in your portfolio that you know you shouldn't have, and it's not hedged, it's not something, somehow, some way, you know, the moon will be in the seventh house, and something will happen to that stack, and you just sort of know it. If you're left sloppy, you know, fix one. It just happens, and the idea that these people that are in power, and not just on this side, on both sides, if these people are in power that come from. God knows where they come from. And it's, you know, it just so happens this is a minority female, you know, so I'm sure I'm politically incorrect. But here's a lady who was on the board of Bank America, and I think the whole board there should be banned from being on boards, you know, pretty much anywhere, male or female. Same way people from Enron boards are still, you know, they're still fat, happy on other boards, right? And so she happens to be married to the So what's his name? Mitch McConnell, and all of a sudden she ends up as his transportation secretary. I know more count on her to make the proper decision here that isn't political than I would my pet Airedale, Kevin. Unfortunately,
well, yeah, Elaine Chao is a political creature. So yes, of course it's political. But what do we mean by political in this sense? Political in that you have a huge government contractor, and therefore the government contractor is going to get the benefit of the doubt. Because I don't see a Democrat Republican political aspect to it.
It's just the incredible
and Elaine Chao. You know, she's what was she Labor Secretary before for George W. Bush?
Yeah.
So I mean, she absolutely is a political creature, and you know, and as much based on her own career as she is for being married to Mitch McConnell.
I don't know the sequence of events there.
To quote, you know, a famous friend of ours, what'd you expect?
Yeah. When people's lives are at stake, and I sense. I sense all kinds of things, Kevin. It comes from being on the South Side and coming from an area that was fairly bigoted for a while. And, you know, the idea that there's all kinds of creatures in the wind here. They're not American people that are dead. All eight of them are. They weren't American pilots, so they must be Dumbos. There's all this kind of stuff in the wind, and yet I don't think I've ever seen a plane of this new in the process where two of them are down, and people, God's sake, the 787 never crashed. It just had a battery problem and it got grounded. I just wonder if people are making the decisions with their eyes open, or whether there's too many blinders on. And
are they giving weight to the right things?
Right. And
I did hear an interview this morning, and you know, I don't know what kind of caught part of it, so I didn't hear everything. But you know, the expert was on, and he was calmly and patiently explaining what the rationale would be for not grounding all the planes, and that that essentially you might be putting some airlines out of business or doing severe damage to them, and that has consequences too, and so on. And then the interviewer said to him, "Would you fly one of these?" And he said, "Oh no."
Yeah.
So, I mean, he did actually, this was a good job in the interview, because he said, "Okay, here's the rationale. Here's what I think." There is a rationale for not doing it, whether it's legitimate or not. But I think the real question, and the other thing he explained, by the way, is here's how you tell what kind of plane you have when you look at your ticket, or when you look at your booking information. This is one where it's kind of left to people to make some important decisions. And he did say, you do have people that have to fly for medical reasons, and there's all kinds of things that if you cancel too many flights, there's bad consequences to that too. So
you don't have to worry about the medical reason.
It really boils down to, okay, we're on our own. How do you educate people and make sure that they know and can make a rational decision themselves as to whether they want to get on that plane or not?
Well, but that's why you hire people. You have your staff working for you as a population. You don't want a decision like this in the middle of the political specter to where you have to make your own. Because guess what? I think I'm a pretty smart guy on a relative basis, but on an absolute basis, everybody I know, including me, is stone cold ignorant, because probably 2% of all the things you probably should know. In terms of the universe, why we're here, how we got here, where we're going, those kinds of things. Yeah.
Tom, big brains like you and me know 3%.
Okay, 3. But I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, the last thing I want to do is to tell a citizenry, make your own decision on whether a bridge that's why we hire structural engineers. That's why structural engineers hire me to manage their portfolios. I mean, people are good at certain things. I'm not good. I mean, you're not a software junkie, but you know a lot about computers and so forth. If there is, quote, a software fix to this thing. Now, of course, if there's no problem, how can you also have a fix? Or I'm smart enough to know that both of those things can't be true.
Yeah, so if it's a software fix, that's one thing. If it's a training issue and these other places in the world don't have the same training standards compared to what we have in the United States, that would be a different issue. So, and I'm not saying that is. I'm just saying I've heard that one thrown out there, too. I don't know, so... I'll drive.
Well, but the idea is when you sell people a quote 737 after 8 models in a row, and you have airlines like Southwest that pride themselves on their pilots can fly all the planes, I'm going to say that you better, if all of a sudden the next one out is so different that it needs different training, I think you better scream long and hard. I mean, and I wonder if you screamed early enough if people would have bought the damn thing. They might have bought the Airbus. But what I'm saying is, Kevin, the question, and I don't know the answer to this, and I don't know, what if there is, quote, a software fix that they think of, and I'll use the term computer lab. All right, if somebody comes out and puts this in 10 planes, how many takeoffs and landings without people on there, by, I'll use the terms test pilots, would you require if you were the transportation secretary before you said okay for all? I'd be like 200 in like 50 different planes before I said okay to all.
Well, and you have to be able to replicate the situation to test it properly. So the first place it's going to be replicated is in simulator. And again, I have no expertise in this area, so I'm, you know, take this with, you know, with the appropriate weight, or give this the appropriate weight. But, you know, are you comfortable that you can create the situation in a simulator that looks like the real world? Because you're not going to be able to give it enough test flights in the real world. You're not going to be able to create the situation in the
okay, but that brings
encountered in the real world.
That brings me to my next issue. When I was a Ute, we flew to Denver of all places after all day at the airport because of fog. Long story. We flew on a then damn near brand new 767, and boy, that thing was sweet compared to like it was. You know, the first like wide body plane I'd ever been on. Boy, that thing was quiet. You were 40,000 feet up, and it was neat. Even though, you know. Because it was a two-engine jet, they had to fly, I'm going to say, a year or two or 6 months or, I don't know, some real long time over land to prove the aircraft out that it was okay to go over water, because if you didn't have three or four engines, they felt if one of the engines went out over the middle Atlantic, you weren't going to make it to where you were going. Where if one engine went out of a 747... the three gets you there, you know, pretty easily, I guess. I mean, I'm not an engineer, but...
Well, it gets you someplace where you can land.
Yeah.
Not necessarily known as your destination.
Right. So...
That's what you're saying, right?
So it turns out after, like, long periods of time, they cleared the 767 to fly over water, which it's been doing, you know, forever. Matter of fact, I don't think they make them anymore, because that's how long ago that was. The plane had to be in service 35 years. And now... Well, the 787 comes out, or the 777, they do all those simulations on computer. Explain to me, Lucy, how that could possibly be the same thing. There's no wind on the simulator. There's no dirt in the velocity indicator, which might be what this is caused by. There's none of that stuff. There's no geese in the computer. There's, you know, how do you replicate 2 or 3 years of actual activity? To the point where
I don't know the answer to that, and we probably need to find somebody with expertise who can explain how thorough the simulator testing is or is not.
I'm going to say that...
Because I honestly don't know.
I'm going to say that when you're down to one company that you favor tremendously over its only competitor, you start to make decisions that other people might look at later and say, what did you do that for? I mean... We basically have two people that make planes now, right? And we want one to win every contract, not the other one, because the other one's those damn Europeans. Right? I mean, it doesn't surprise me, because I went through this on the trading floor, and I'll say this on air, on TV, put me on 60 Minutes and I'll say it. When some idiot decided to, and I'm not saying they're an idiot, okay, because one exchange maybe shouldn't have had a monopoly. But when somebody, put it this way, when you're an idiot when you don't think of all the consequences or even want to. So for instance, Kevin, when I entered the business, IBM only traded on the CBOE. Digital Equipment only traded on the Amex. So the competition was designed as when an order came in, okay, and the expenses, the commissions were more. I'll buy that. I'll admit that. But you went to a certain place. There was an open outcry trade, okay, and I'm not saying things have to be open outcry these days, but in the sense that your order was handled in what they call an auction market, and the competition was in getting to that place quicker than the other guy, maybe in commissions, and when it got into the pit, the competition in price was among all the people in the pit, and the broker could not trade for his own account. He had to expose that order, whatever order it was, one at a time, to an open outcry system, to an auction market where people bid and offered on it. Okay, so there were the entire regulatory group was designed in making sure that all that happened sequentially. That somebody didn't steal the order, somebody didn't preference it didn't trade in a booth, it didn't trade in an aisle, You know, somebody to put it in their pocket and trade it with themselves. The entire regulatory group was designed to make that happen, or none of those bad things to happen. And they did a pretty damn good job. Matter of fact, it was one of those things where if something traded in the pit, it shouldn't have, it probably affected you, so people policed it themselves. Right? I mean, there's honor among thieves? Well, there was serious honor among thieves. Now, when you opened up competition between the exchanges and say, okay, IBM could be listed both on the CBOE and the Amex. Now the firms who really wanted the other side of the order, really wanted to preference that order, they would come in and they would say, we want to cross this order, A, with another client or with the firm. Because somebody was willing to pay $4 for this. By the way, we'd like to sell it at $4 and we don't need you guys. We'd like the other side of this, quote, dumb customer trade. So now, the part of the competitive landscape was, if you don't let me break the rules here, I'll go to the other place, they will. Okay, and the exchanges now, were very aware that Merrill Lynch was not just that's somebody who showed up with an order. They weren't part of the distribution system anymore. They sort of became the customer, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And once that happened, the whole system started to stink like spoiled chicken. They absolutely did. And I saw things where people should have been in jail, and firms and boards should have been, you know, tossed out. Saw all kinds of things. And I saw stuff where somebody would come into a crowd and say, where's the market on a spread? Quarter, three eighths. We're going to pay a half. We want to take at least half the other side. We'll let you guys in on the other half. You can split it up. In other words, if you're part of the crime. Now let's see, Kevin. An eighth times 100 is $1,250 last time I checked. And a felony is what, 100? So I'm going to say that these were felonies. Didn't happen very often, but it always was a firm taking advantage of, and if God help you, if you ever called a floor official, then they would just say, okay, I'm taking my business to the Amex. And the people in the disciplinary group, or the market reg, were totally powerless to deal with it, because now the distribution system became stronger than the exchange and the rules. And what I'm saying is, when you drop down to the thought of, if this would have been an Airbus, there's no way I can win or lose this bet. This is an Airbus. The thing is grounded. You can't get yourself now out of the system, because I've seen it happen. Politically, it's just very hard to do. I mean, they've been delivering this thing for what, a year? I don't know exactly. Maybe the listeners know.
I don't know. So yeah, somebody can tweet that into us.
But there's 370 of them out there already. I mean, deliveries are dramatic. And if this is that much different to fly than the other ones, but Kevin, I can't even begin to think, and I know I'm going too far on this, is that we're not talking about a battery fire on the ground. We're talking about, you know, two planes out of the first year of delivery that are down. Not just down like in some huge storm or something no other plane could deal with. We're talking about on takeoff, which is pretty darn safe, landing on the ground by the nose where there isn't a piece of debris bigger than your arm. But this is a big deal.
So I would go back and then say, even if this is some kind of training issue and the training standards are lax or lacking in some of the other countries for licenses, you know, for the pilots, that it's still a problem.
Yeah.
Because it's something that's happening, and if you start looking at this just from a pure statistical, you know, forget the human lives involved and all those things that are more important, and just look at it statistically, this is kind of an off-the-charts thing.
Right.
This is not normal. So we still have to be dealing with it. And I think that's part of where, when we come back and say, do we ground it or not, you have something going on here that needs to be fixed. The second question I have, though, goes back to, you know, how do we test it? How do we test whatever the fix is? I don't know how much we have to rely on simulators or how comfortable we should be with how much we have to rely on simulators. I don't know the answer. I'd love to track down a pilot or somebody with expertise to have as a guest, but I really can't offer an opinion on that. Simulators may be the greatest, most perfect thing in the world for all I know, but I don't know. You know, I do know from my world of software testing and all the times that I was involved in that, that it's really, really hard to test all circumstances, you know, because if all you do is put it in the air and fly it around with nobody on the plane for, you know, I don't know, 100 flights, 1,000 flights, whatever it is, you're not going to encounter most, or you're not going to encounter, let's pick a number. You'll encounter routinely every day 80% of the circumstances that are out there. But the other 20%, some of those you will encounter, but some of them you will never encounter until 5 years down the road.
Well, the other part, there's two things there. I'm using this as kind of a segue here into like some other stuff. And can you believe the people you've hired? There's two things I'd want to know, Kevin. One is there's two planes down, okay, and there appears to be, from what the people hear on TV, that somehow or other in some situations this thing wants to tell you that you're entering a stall and it wants to put the nose down. If the pilot isn't ready for that, it doesn't shut off that system, or he doesn't know where the switch is or whatever, doesn't shut off that system, that he could be in trouble. But if he knows what he's doing, he evidently shuts the system off and he's okay. Now, what I'd like to know is, out of the 100,000 takeoff and landings this thing's had already, how many times did that have to happen? Now, if it's one or two others, you know, that now, you know, you could be taking that thing up and down till the cows come home before you find it happen again. New system or old. If it's happened like 300 other times, and 298 of them, the pilot got in there and intercepted it, well, then you got a problem that's happening like a real lot. You know what I'm saying? I can't believe that it hasn't happened to where pilots have fixed it and come back and reported it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would seem odd, because they're telling you there's a fix to it. But my concern, Kevin, is you look around and I see people in the regulatory business and securities. I see what the Fed is doing. We saw what happened with Katrina, where they knew there was a problem with the dike in the one area and just somehow didn't fix it. Chicago knew they had a hole in the tunnel system here and didn't fix it. Are the people we have in these positions this free and confident across the board? And to where I refuse to believe that. With all the education stuff in this country, time and time again, is the political system puts the wrong people in these places? I mean, what is going on, I guess, is my question. And I don't know the answer, Kevin. I don't know how I'm ever going to find out the answer, to be honest with you. But something seems weird. But S&P futures are they're up 5. The NASDAQ futures up 12. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters. the daily news, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Right now. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Kevin O'Neill. He's Jay-Z, Jessica Zaluski, manning the board, or should we say womaning the board or something over there. Doing a good job. S&P Futures up 450. March is up 450. The June is up 425. I think the June is probably top step now. The June NASDAQ is up 13 at a Dow up 23. Boeing's only down $3 this morning, so it's not as big of a drag as it was the last couple days. Around the rest of the world, we've got the Brexit issue, okay, which resounding no vote again. Now they have to vote to see whether they're going to leave without a deal or they're going to ask for an extension to try and weasel a slightly better deal. But Europe is not doing very much. DAX down 3 points. Call that flat. FTSE up 2. Call that flat. CAC around up 18. Call that 0.3%. And we have the machine shifting here. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 213. That's 1%. Shanghai down 33. That's 1.1%. Hang Seng down 113.4%. These guys have been violently up and down over the last couple of weeks, mostly to the upside. We've got oil trading up 58 cents, 57.45. It's up a full percent. That's high as we've seen in a while. Spread up 67.11. So that spread is roughly $9, called 60 cents. Natural gas, 277. Nothing going on there. RBOB up another 1 penny, 183. Pretty soon we're going to be $3 at the pump. This keeps up. I'm not looking for that, driving the big Suburban with a 42-gallon tank. Gold up $10, 1308. That's good for me. The silver up 13 cents, 1540.54. So we'll see where if that keeps moving. All kinds of crazy stuff we'll talk about after traffic, weather, sports. Kevin, are you going to jail for putting people in colleges? We'll see. Jay-Z, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Thanks, Chief. Good morning, everyone. The time is now 6:36. It is raining here in Chicago this morning. You can expect rain all morning with a little dry spout in the middle of the day and
it's
more
a rainy
showers
night
tonight.
Georgia.
Yeah, but we don't live in Georgia. Yeah, I do. No. Singing is good for your soul.
Not me. It's calming. I'm the only one who didn't make the choir in fourth grade. It's been a scar on my psyche for my whole life.
Well, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Anyway, today's high is 57, low 41. Phoenix is cloudy today with a high of 65 and a low of 42. In basketball, the Bulls lost to the Lakers 123-107 while the Suns were off. In the NCAA, St. Mary's beat Gonzaga 60-47. And in hockey, the Coyotes beat the Blues, 3-1. Blackhawks were off, and there were no accidents to report. Back to you.
So, Kevin, are you part of the college cheating scam? A lot of celebrities are, and we are celebrities on Stocks and Jacks.
Yes, I actually am the original person. I wasn't supposed to get into college at all.
You know, it's a. I know people think that I defend my quote profession, even though I'm not an economist by profession, by saying that you can tell by behavior of people. So, you know, it was so simple in our day, Kevin, and I was in honors at Marist. You know, I did well, and I applied for two schools, and I got in both of them, one being Notre Dame, and I just went. You know, and the tuition wasn't that much, and I didn't think it was that all but difficult to get in. I'm thinking 12 guys from my graduating class at Marist went. I mean, how many from yours at Loyola? There's got to be a few. I mean, you couldn't be, you know, I would say anybody in the top 25% from a good school got in. I don't think it was all that hard, do you? I mean, you couldn't have been the last in your class that got in, but you certainly could have. I mean, there's nowhere. My graduating class at Marist, that if you wanted to go someplace, they found a pretty decent school for you. It might have been, you know, Wisconsin Whitewater. It might have been Northern Illinois. It might have been someplace, but
sure,
you know, no place that was bad, no place you couldn't learn, no place you couldn't get an accounting degree and whatever you wanted to do. And now all of a sudden you get to this thing where there's, you know, there's 1,000 applications for 200 spots. And we had Jean Pearl Marabito, her previous name was Pearl, was on the show. She's the director of admissions to the University of Michigan engineering school. And she said right on the air, you're turning down people that you know are very capable of doing the work you'd be happy to have here, and the numbers just aren't there. And plus everybody's sending in 15 applications, so they don't even know how many want to come up there in the first place. It becomes this big sort of, I'll use the term, mess. And she says, "Yeah, you're turning. It's not a question of. So if you're, I mean, one of our buddies, the other doc, not Dr. J, his son was on the waiting list at Notre Dame, and then he didn't get in. You know, and Doc was a supporter and blah blah blah, and he's like, what the hell? But there never was any question. He had graduated from a high.
The selective schools have to turn down a lot of qualified people.
And so, at an economic system, if you're a behavioral economist, you would expect essentially an underground shtick to go on here, because you know games can get played. I know that a guy, and I won't say the name, but he went to a high school out by Audrey and I don't know which one, Sandberg, one of those places out there near Orland, and he was a pretty star baseball player. And he was going to go to the Stanford coach shows up and says, by the way, I can get you an academic ride, because he was top 10 maybe out of, you know, I mean, smart kid. And because you play baseball. Okay. Meanwhile, the valedictorian applies there, it was a lady, and the guy who's the number 3 in the class applies there to Stanford, and they both get flushed, as they used to say at the University of Chicago. Now, that would raise an eyebrow to me a little bit, because obviously there's more to this than the academic ride than the academic part. There's obviously, so 10 years later, am I surprised that people are coaching people to say you're on the crew team when you're not, to you're on the tennis team when you're not, or you went to one practice? Am I surprised that people are doing that kind of stuff? No, I'm not, Kevin.
They are doing is they're fraudulently creating credentials.
Yes.
And they're bribing coaches to say this is a recruited athlete. So, you know, that's obviously the fraud part.
Right.
What gets me is that you've always been able to donate big money and get extra sway with the admissions department at
hence,
a lot of schools.
Hence the movie Back to School.
So, you know,
Rodney.
I don't know the circumstances of these young people, but I'm kind of guessing that if you couldn't go the above board route that seems to work so well for so many people, they must be really unqualified.
They could be Derrick Rose.
Could be.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, how it all shakes up. But essentially, I don't see in this, today's world this is how much it's changed for people that are young. Jay-Z. In my day, Marist was somewhat advanced. We not only took the SATs, we took the PSATs. So they were like practice national exams. You took them when you were a freshman or a sophomore.
We took them when we were juniors, beginning of junior year or something.
Well, there was
like
something we did freshman, sophomore, just to learn how to take a big test. But the story from the day was, don't even worry about, you know, studying for your ACT or SAT, because it's a compilation of 12 years of learning. Study's not going to help you. That was, no, nobody. I don't think there was a training class at all, Kevin. You just went and took it.
I think there were some prep courses out there, and they existed because there was. In fact, I think I bought a book that sort of did some coaching for it, or maybe I did that for the GMAT when I went to grad school. I don't remember, but that, you know, that just sort of explained the sections of the test and said, you know, here is what you have to do well on it. As an example, I remember there was a section of the test where you had to identify, they give you a problem and then they give you two facts. And you had to identify whether A would solve the problem, B would solve the problem, A or B would solve the problem, or you need both A and B to solve
right, well,
the problem.
Right, well, I hated
those.
Well,
the irresistible urge is solve the problem and then say, what did I use? The problem with that is, you'll get about three problems done in the time you have to do the
test.
Right. And so you will score low. So it's those kinds of things that I remember as prep, but there was nothing that told you, well, here, let me teach you some basic algebra.
No, I mean, I'm going to say this happened right after me. So you're 2 years after me. Mine was like probably the last year where they were foolish enough to say, you know, that the prep doesn't work. But anyway, then it became, I know, in Tom Shanahan, who's a contributor to the show, I think Eric took his first simulated ACT when he was in, like, eighth grade. Or something. Now it's to the point where these kids are, that's all their, that's unfair. But I mean, it's a big part of their high school is learning how to score on these tests. It is, you know.
Sure, because the high schools get their, in many cases, funding is tied to it, but even if it's not funding, in many cases, their reputation is based in large part on how well their kids do on standardized tests.
But it does not surprise me, being from the South Side, that I know Gene would never do something like this, but if somebody's able to walk into Michigan like Rodney Dangerfield, and Back to School and say, my son is qualified, I don't know if he's the most qualified, but he'll do well. By the way, you guys look like you need a new business school. My son looks like he wants to take accounting. Do we have a deal? It doesn't surprise me that kind of stuff goes on, Kevin. But why do people think it would end there? Why doesn't somebody, when Gene is out for dinner somewhere, a bottle of champagne pop at the table and say there's more behind that if my son gets to the top of the list? I mean, why would anybody think that wouldn't happen, or there wouldn't be people's, when you've got essentially 500 people qualified for 200 spots? In the fact that it's disorganized, but why would anybody think that it wouldn't happen? Or somebody asking Gene, what's wrong with my son's application? It doesn't show any extracurriculars. Now it does. Right? Right? How do they look now? Well, did she really, or did he or she really, work for this, nonprofit firm for a while? Did they really serve at the soup kitchens every summer? I don't know. I think they might have. Duh. Are they really on a rowing team?
Could have.
Yeah. Are they really out on the rowing team? Well, it looks to me like they got a kayak out behind their house. They must row. You know, I mean, right? I mean, you could embellish everything. Now, we didn't have to do any of that stuff. I mean, you just put the stuff down and you went. I mean, you played football.
Well, yeah, but, you know, I also remember, because I had a lot of activities in high school, I also remember that I had to, for my Notre Dame application, had to turn it on its side and write in the margins. You don't turn anything on its side now because it's all online.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess the huge, but you know, if somebody knows about hey, is Susie having a problem or Tommy having a problem getting in school? Hey, I know a guy that knows how. We'll teach you how to fill out the admissions thing, and he'll coach him on the test, and it won't be a problem. Do you think people with money would balk at saying if it's help, it's help? I mean, I don't. S&P futures.
Yeah, it's still mystifying that, you know, this is all aimed at prestigious colleges and getting them.
Hey, hold that thought, bud. S&P futures up. Hold that thought. S&P futures up 6. NASDAQ futures up 19. Be right back. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Owens. She's Jay-Z on the board. He's Kevin O'Neill from Southwest Michigan, near Indiana, Michiana, I believe they call it.
Yeah, Michiana. Southwest Michigan.
S&P futures up 6, Dow futures up 23, Boeing is down 418, NASDAQ up 21. The Kevin, what's in, were you after the break, you were holding a thought, up on your hand.
Well, no, I was actually blurting it out, you know, as we went into the break, but I held it. I did hold it, and that is, these kids are all going to college. You know, it's not, it was not, I don't think that was an issue. It was which college. And, you know, it's just amazing to me that these parents are so hung up. Their kids are totally silver-spooned here. They're, you know, they probably don't even need to go to college. I guess where I'm going with this is totally a prestige play for the parents,
well,
more
sure
so
is.
Than for the young people.
Well,
and
duh.
It, you know, it's just amazing to me that it's so darn important for a parent to say my kid went to Yale or my kid went to USC. That it's so important that they're willing to corrupt themselves for it.
It's a lot of times the parents want to get a kid in a certain high school because they want to meet the parents. Like if you're in the insurance business, or I guess even if you're in my business, money management. Even though I never did this. I want my kids to go to Parker or Latin or someplace.
Yeah, I understand the parents who want their kids to move up in the world, and they want them rubbing shoulders with the people who are going to be, who come from the the well-to-do families, and to get in with that crowd because that'll get them make them successful. These are the people that don't need to do that.
But they feel they do.
To continue to rub shoulders with the quote right people.
They feel they do, Kevin.
And that's the part that is mystifying to me is it's just such a weird brand of corruption.
Kevin, if the...
You know, I the motivation is really, really hard to understand other than that somehow as a parent it makes me look better.
What's hard to understand in this one... Well, I'm going to take a pot shot at my buddy Kevin. The hard to understand part is that you don't understand it. Just because you're not that way, and I'm not that way, and most of the listeners are probably not that way, there's all kinds of people that want to be in the right spot. Remember when Gentleman Jim in the movie, where the guy got in the club and he got himself paged, so everybody knew he was in there all the time?
Oh, yeah.
the idea of somebody who's, in his mind, made it, and has his kid in a private school and so forth. So the other kid can meet the other kids, and B, so he can meet the parents, will do anything he possibly can, even though it's a fine place, to make sure he or she is not in Eastern Illinois. They're not going to meet the right person there, or they could meet an NFL quarterback. They're going to be somewhere else. And it's amazing how these schools, for a lot of the parents, they go from place to place. But for a long time, a lot of our North Shore friends, yours and mine, the University of Virginia was the hot place, right? Well, because all of a sudden it became impossible to get in, everybody's fall-off point was Richmond. And as soon as one or two or three of the, quote, right kids went to Richmond, all of a sudden Richmond is a spot where they can all go. Then it became Vanderbilt, because all of a sudden, even though it was always a fine school, you could get in there, right? Even though you might not be able to get into Notre Dame or Michigan or someplace, Vanderbilt is probably everybody is good, all of a sudden you could get in. And now for two or three years, everybody's getting with the Vanderbilt. And now this is what I'm seeing. Now Tulane is a place like that. And they're all 50, 60, 70 grand. But it becomes, a school essentially elevates itself into one of the groups you're talking about. And oh, by the way, everybody's kid can get in there. So then it becomes a spot for a while, and then maybe you can't get in there and there's another place. So the schools can essentially move up, even though they haven't done anything different. But now all of a sudden that name is acceptable. You can say in polite society, my kid's going to Vanderbilt or Tulane
it's on the list now.
Yeah, it's not on the list.
It's moved to the A list.
Right. But even though, Iowa is probably as fine a school as you're going to find, if somebody says my kid went to Iowa, the first thing that came in your mind, well, he or she didn't get into Illinois. They sure as hell didn't get into Notre Dame or Northwestern. And Iowa was the fourth choice. Even though if you're going to be a vet or anything along those lines, or a doctor or anything, I can't imagine a better place to go than Iowa. I mean, can you? I mean, or Purdue for engineering. I mean, so even though you and I think differently than what we're talking about, so you can't use your gray matter to judge them, because it's not the same. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah, the dishonest mindset. I'm glad I don't understand it.
Well, that's the I'm not surprised about it. I mean, it's really no different than somebody building an athletic field for a place to get his kid in, which people have been doing forever. Right?
Yeah, other than being above board, yeah. And the difference, I guess, is bribing the school versus bribing individuals.
Well, bribing the school is okay. Anybody else that gets any money, you know, the school doesn't like that.
Yeah, you can't have that.
God. I mean, it is scary, isn't it? The morals of these places. God help an assistant coach gets, you know, $5,000 for saying, yeah, I looked at the kid for rowing when he never rowed in his life. He's going to come try out for a sport that nobody even cares about. There's no revenue there. God help that guy gets $5,000, but if the school were to get $50,000, that's a different story. Right?
Yeah, although I think it takes more than $50,000 for the school.
Well, that, you know, the price is going up, eh?
Yeah, price is up.
Oh, man. You know, you're running into this, Kevin, a lot. You know, next time, maybe on Friday, we're going to talk a little bit of the, we were talking about aid to people. You know, and the Democrats want to give stuff to people, and the Republicans want to give stuff to people. They want to essentially tax the other people to give stuff to their friends. Both sides, to me, it's pretty clear that that's what both sides want to do. And then, to me, one stinks just as bad as the other in that regard. But I was talking about the difference in the investment. And for, I think our buddy Tom Conway, our buddy from NOAA, I think his dad went on the, I think he was both at Notre Dame when in the Navy for a while during the war. I think he might have done his GI Bill work at Navy. At Notre Dame. So I'm going to say at the cost of that time, and he ended up like owning a bus company and all kinds of other stuff, and raising some pretty nice kids that became scientists and so forth, I'm going to say that was a pretty seriously good investment for this country. I mean, because it didn't cost very much, and I think that you got the returns and taxes and everything else, you got it back in spades, basically. Now, I'm not so sure that every guy or lady who's in the Army throwing them at Michigan or Notre Dame for 70 G a year is a very good investment. And I was wondering, the schools like you're involved in, and we'll talk about this Friday, or some of the trade schools, which I think do a pretty darn good job, are they part of the pie? In other words, could I, if I was a coming back veteran, could I get tuition to go to your place or a trade school or something like that instead of, you know, the 70 G to go some other place? I mean,
yeah. The short answer is yes. Let me give you a couple of quickie statistics before we get off. One, yes, it is financial aid eligible for VA as well as general financial aid. Number two is we'll send people inexpensively to 4-year colleges with 2 years under their belt, and you know, you've stayed home, got a job, and you're not going away to IU or Ball State or someplace like that, already $50,000 in the hole. Part three, though, is that if you look at jobs being created over the next, 10 years, roughly 60% of them are going to require something beyond a high school diploma, but only half of those need a college degree.
Okay.
The others need professional certifications, associate's programs, things like that. So, as an example, a network engineer with Cisco certification is just fine.
All right, well, let's talk about that on Friday.
That's the equation. We can talk more about it Friday.
Okay, SP Futures now up 8. Looks like we're putting a whip to it again today. NASDAQ Futures up 30. Be right back. Hopefully, Mr. Russell Rhodes. If not, we'll have Mr. Frank Fay for a little bit until Russell Rhodes does call him.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, Innovation in Human Resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTIsecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTIsecurities.com. That's john@PTIsecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. She's Jay Z on the board. I guess she just dropped poor Frank. Maybe we'll get him back. We do have Russell. SP Futures up 8 now. We're trying to put the whip to this market again. We've got the last week we were down. This week we seem to want to be up. Nobody kind of in the way either direction. We've got a lot of stuff going on with the feds of the world, and now Jerome Powell is, he's kind of almost being adamant that now the new way is the highway. Even the old way 2 weeks ago was his first choice. But anyway, that's where that is. Russell, how are you, bud? We seem to don't know Russell either. We must have somebody someplace. Okay, Jay-Z will be... Anyway, we have Boeing now only up... I'm sorry, down 247, as the FAA again said we're not grounding them, blah, blah, blah. We can't see anything systematic. Like I said earlier, and I'm not going to harp on this one. Russell, how are you?
You know, I can barely hear you, man.
How about, where are you?
I'm sitting outside at FIA in Boca Raton, Florida.
Well, I mean, you're probably the one sitting out there in the wind and the rain and whatever.
No, I totally blame Jay-Z.
I would, too. By the way, are you flying home on a 737 MAX, or are you taking the train?
No, I am not flying on a 737 MAX, and... I was actually, I checked to make sure before I flew down here because my wife told me I had to check. And I'm not sure if hoping or not hoping?
Well, if you find a bill, you know, a canceled check that you didn't write to the insurance company, upping
I'll
policy.
I'll look into that when I get back.
I'm going to say that then you know which way she was hoping.
Yeah.
By the way,
I think she wants to keep me around.
I have something that maybe only, you know, maybe only Frank knows the answer to this because he knows all kinds of weird stuff. If people go down outside, like, the 12-mile limit, isn't there an international top on how much the airline has to pay the people that die?
I have no idea.
I'm not sure.
I think
you call Phil Corboy and Associates in Chicago.
I think there is.
They'll work with it.
I think there is, because when the TWA plane went down, I think that was part of the, whether that's changed or not. You end up in, what's naval law or international law or something?
Yeah.
Maritime.
When that plane went down in Mexico City not too long ago, a lot of the people ended up going to Corboy and Associates here in Chicago. They're the big boys on airplane crashes. Because that the plane was built in the States and a maintenance overhaul had taken place in the States. So there were deep pockets all the way around. And so that crash was being adjudicated in Chicago.
Really? That's
Boeing's in Chicago.
That's wild. What do you guys make of, let's do the Brexit piece first. They're voting on a no-deal Brexit today, which I actually hope wins, because I think that's what most people voted for. And if I could possibly, there's a history to this. How Irish does this sound? One of the worst guests we ever had on the show, we've only had a couple of crummy ones, was a guy who was in the parliament in Brussels, believe it or not, that Kathy got from, like, Finland or whatever. And we got him, like, a couple of days after the Brexit vote. And there was a guy that was seriously pissed off. And he said that it was an example of how politicians don't explain things properly to their people so they vote the right way, which is the exact comment along. And I'm sitting there going, you've got to be bleeping me.
Well, it appears that he may have been right. Only 21% of eligible British voters or United Kingdom voters voted for this, you know, much like how many people voted for Trump.
Or how many people voted for the mayor.
The public's attitude is far different right now.
Well, it is because they've been working on it for 3 years.
Well, they realize what it is. His point. Now they know what it is. They didn't before.
I'm gonna take the other
side. Perhaps.
I don't know. I'm on the other side of this one totally, because I don't think the people in Britain. I mean, Russell, you've probably done a history of this in your class, so tell me where I'm wrong. It started out as the common market, right? So we're going to try and find a way where, even though we have border checkpoints at seemingly every 50 feet, that we're going to find a way to where goods don't have duties every spot we go. Because all of a sudden we can't even maneuver stuff back and forth. It started out as a common market. It started out somewhere along the line. The British people, I don't think, ever gave up their sovereignty and rulemaking to the people in Brussels. I know I never would here. And I know we sort of have on, this is why I'm asking you, because, you know, haven't we sort of, in some of our monetary doings, that there's this big monetary conference coming up, is it this year or next year, and some of my buddies from the Fed can't wait to have that thing because they want to change some from the last one. I think they've hurt us a little bit. I mean, we sign up for these, quote, international rules, don't we? I don't know if the average British person ever wanted is basically his teapot regulated in Brussels. And
I'm sure they didn't. And I don't think we would want anything. I don't think we would want the UN to actually be able to dictate any of the laws in the United States. Maybe that's a little bit more extreme.
Well, I'm not really. I mean,
yeah, because the British are at least part of the European culture,
right?
Well, but
it's, you know, some governmental agency that is not even in your country dictating how you go about doing things. That's that used to be, people would go to war to try to get that kind of power.
Well, Chris, when he was asked, said,
"Well, the Irish got the." The Good Friday Accord, which was under, you know, this the European Union, and they've never seen greater prosperity than when they left the British yoke.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a million sides to this story. But this guy was darn near adamant that the people in Brussels, his group, knew what the best was for everybody, which is exactly the attitude that the British people said, up yours, basically. I mean, it's exactly what they voted against. So as soon as I heard this guy, I'm going, I know how I would have voted, being sort of a rebel on my own. But what did Chris say? There's 75 pages of regulations regarding the movement of cabbage, Frank, or something?
Wow.
It's incredible what these guys have. I mean, I don't know why... people and these guys have this idea that everything has to be written down and done, but we're starting to get that here. I was talking to somebody who had a house closing, and I absolutely can't. You guys probably know, and I was mentioning this yesterday, but I want to think about it, that if you go to a house closing, it used to be, you know, bring a couple hundred bucks in case there's a screw up in the addition. Do you know if you're 100 bucks off now, you cannot pull it out of your pocket and hand it to the other guy? It's got to be wired. How the hell did that ever become a rule? When if you're okay with it, the other guy's okay with it, the third party says, "Oh no, you can't give $100. You got to wire it to him." What? How would that ever make it to rule status if we didn't have some dumb bureaucrat basically in the middle of this?
So who benefits from that?
Just
the IRS be reporting
because they get to keep up with it. Yeah, well, maybe that's where it came from. That's what I was trying to figure out. As you said, it, you know, when a rule doesn't make sense, you got to figure out, okay, who would like that rule? And I guess the tax man would like that rule.
Well, I mean, the thing of it is,
couldn't you launder make it $100,000 and then perhaps not have it show up on the closing documents, sign off everything, and yeah, you gave me $100,000.
That's exactly the secondary thought I was having. Great minds thinking alike and everything.
Well, I was
if people are, you know, maybe, you know, chief says, you know, 100 or 200 bucks, and maybe people are like, you know, this happens at closing, why can't it be 6-7 figures? So,
well, why can't it be?
That might be, you know,
But you know, there was a young lady, I drive Greg home once in a while. So last night he's like, I work for a half hour. I said, fine, I'll stop in the Buckingham and I'll have a quick one. Just me and a lady behind the bar. And something was on TV, and it got me to this part about cash. And I said to her, "Do you know that you can't even bring $100 like to a mortgage anymore?" And she says, "Well, that's because they don't know where you got the $100." I mean, this is how much in tuned the young people are buying into this. I'm going to say crap. I said, "What business is anybody where I got the $100?" Well, people want to know where you got the $100. Who's the people? It's almost like bad medicine we're giving these young people that everybody has to know about everybody else's business.
The man needs to know about everybody else's business.
Well, but I mean, you could never
and get, Google and Facebook.
Is there going to be a time when people are going to push back on this, or are they just going to realize that's the way it is and bend over and spread them? I mean, what are we doing here?
I think the generation behind us totally feels that way. They're just kind of used to everybody being in their stuff, so it doesn't bother them as much as it does us.
I don't get how it. I'm going to use the term "doesn't bother them" yet. But anyway, I want to ask. Well, while we have you, Russell, because you're coming in and out, so I don't know if we can hang with you the whole way. But the Fed. I'm looking at the weekly money supply numbers. We're back up to this 6% growth in money supply. With a 2% market and now growth, and now we're seeing oil prices marching up. We're seeing yesterday the CPI was 2%, and even by the way they 0.2%, even by the way they calculate it, are we running a danger here of all of a sudden one of these days having a pretty nasty inflation number, or is that just me talking? You're the professor. I mean,
no, I think you're dead on with that one, but. The other side of that is I feel like we've been saying this. You could say the same thing for years, and it hasn't caught up with us. And I don't know if, pushing it farther and farther out is going to result in, you know, it being even nastier the farther you push it down the road.
If But it's landed a few spots. I know I say this kind of every day, but it's landed. If you take the medical part and move it up to 20, I think you got a number. The number would be different. One that hit me last week is, Frank, were you, you and I kind of went back and forth there. I thought that if your car just came off lease, that your new lease, if it's a 3-year lease, is going to be $300 to $350 more per month than the old car was. I mean, it's dramatic increases in lease car prices all of a sudden. I mean,
I can't remember the last time you saw something like that.
Yeah, I mean, but we're seeing these kinds of jumps in a lot of places. And I mean, I know that Notre Dame is what? It's over 70 this year, right, Frank?
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a solid 3-4% a year. And I was just listening to something else like Major, and it was 4-5% over last year. It's sort of everywhere. If you go down, I wouldn't do it with you guys, but I did it with David. I went down the Bureau of Labor Statistics list, and I just called out a segment. I said, what do you suspect up from last year? And there was stuff in there that David predicted like 5%. It was like -1. I mean, you wonder where the hell they're looking. Asset prices are part of it as well. Obviously, nobody who has money wants to see the stock market go back down. I don't want to see it go back down because I have, it's my job, man, is to do management for people, and I'm in the stock market. But I also know that you can't artificially prop something up forever, although Russell, it's starting to seem like forever. When why can't we do it forever? We've done it for like a long time.
I feel like this is, I can't remember when it was, but, and I still hold it, but we bought gold for both of my daughters bought some GLD for their college, 2 or 3 years ago, and I think we're a little bit red on it still. But I like having it there because I think I do think there's going to be some sort of inflation spike, and the timing on that for me is 4 and 6 years. That's what I got staring me down the... It's when I'm sending them to school.
Well, then the question comes down to, by the way, I have a lot of my people in, I'm in the GDX, the gold miner stacks, not the GLD, and it hasn't really gone anywhere. We've made some money recently by having it's ran up and down a few times, Russell. So we've bought and sold. We bought and sold the put protection, so we've made money on the adjustments. Well, you're right; it hasn't gone anywhere.
I've been doing something opposite with options as well. I've just been selling the calls when it gets up there against owning a longer dated call.
Yeah, I mean, it's whenever this GDX gets up to 23, I keep thinking, oh, we're just finally taking off. Somebody comes out with the club, and it's like whack-a-mole, and it's right back down again. But it really is. Whenever it gets to 23, just when you think it's quote a breakout, it's a break in. Mm-hmm. The question is, if we do have a spout inflation, is gold going to be in this day and age when we're now older? Is gold going to be the place people flee to?
I think eventually it will be. If people start to look around and they see that gold hasn't made the move, maybe they feel like they've still got a chance to hedge themselves against a little bit of inflation with gold. It always has worked in the past. I can't.
Russell, you're starting to sound like you're underwater, bud. You're going to have to call back or something. We have to straighten you out. Otherwise, you sound like you're a reverb unit.
Sorry.
And you're old enough to remember what that is.
How about
this?
That's better.
Sadder?
Yeah, it's way better. Hey, Jay-Z, what's a reverb unit?
Okay.
I don't know. Tell
I took
me.
My headset off.
All right. That'll work.
No, I was just saying that, I really feel like it. Since gold hasn't made the move, if people really do start to get frightened from inflation, they're going to say what has worked in the past, and that's what has worked in the past. So it'll offer the same thing.
I'm going to say that no matter what, we were way early.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I've already been way early. I know that. Yeah. I get reminded by my co-portfolio manager at home that periodically.
That's all you need is...
when is gold going to move?
Yeah, that's all you need is a bird chirping.
We're going to be happy it's there.
Yeah, a bird chirping on your shoulder. I thought you said this was a good stack. the best line is my buddy, his mom has an account here, and she's up there, but she's still doing okay. Just a nice lady, bright lady. And so I go to one of the, graduations for the kids. I run to her, and she goes, "Tommy, come on over here." And "Tommy, how's that for somebody older than you calling you?" And she goes, my son bought this Citigroup. This is like 2007. And all it's doing is going down, and he tells me we're in for the long haul. Does that mean he bought a real clunker? And I go, yeah. She says, whatever somebody says we're in for the long haul, I immediately think it's a horrible buy. I go, pretty much. But you can't watch a financial TV show all day long where somebody buys something, like one of these big portfolio managers, at least in their own mind. Yeah, well, we bought XYZ. Like Boeing, we bought all Boeing, and it's down like, whatever, $50. Ah, we're in for the long haul. Well, that means it was a horrible buy, pretty much, right?
People are always, unless the rules get changed like some people want, people are always going to fly.
Well,
we need planes.
Well, that's what we were kind of talking with Kevin, is that right now when you have I won't do it with you guys again, but I made the connection between when the floor, when the competition started to be defined as, who can essentially have oral sex with the distribution system rather than actually worried about the trade itself being sacred. Part of the competition became whether we'll let people break the rules on the SIBO or let people break the rules on the Amex. And the person who let people break the rules the most essentially got the trades from some of the member firms. That was considered, good management towards your customers. Well, in this day and age, when we have two airline manufacturers, we have airlines depending on these planes, and we really don't ever want to favor Airbus, can our people make the right call here? And I honestly question that. I'm not accusing them of anything. I just say, can the call be pure? And I'm thinking the answer is no.
Well, the president's tweets yesterday morning were very spooky. About it was as if he wasn't really supporting advanced technology in airplanes, which is one of our strongest areas of export.
I will say this in the man's defense. He has a sense about things that I wish he would clean himself up in other areas, but if you're looking at Southwest Air, that has flown every iteration of the 737, and their whole point was, in terms of maintenance, it was okay. And I think...
And training.
Yes, but I think if a pilot showed up to fly the 737-300, and he just got off a 200, he hopped right in and drove it off. Flew it off.
Exactly.
Now, if this plane is that much different, I'm not so sure it's in the spirit of what these people want to do. Now, the president maybe is right. Have we reached the point where this thing is so overloaded with crap that it can't get out of its own way? I mean,
or is it because Boeing and the powers that be are trying to blame third world or second world pilots?
Well, let me just throw this.
Defer with the, project the blame on somebody else.
Well, let me just say this. If there's nothing wrong with your car, I shouldn't have to give it a fix. So they claim they have a fix now, a software fix. If there's a fix, doesn't that sort of imply something's wrong?
Exactly. It's like they admitted that there's a problem.
Yeah, I think what they're saying is...
My son, older son, who's really into this, just lack focus, says that he believes it's a problem with sensors, and he's a software guy. And if all the sensors aren't working, then you get garbage data, or if it's poorly working. And he thinks they need redundant sensors to the automatic pilot system.
This is what I think I've learned so far. And again, please enlighten me, is that something happens, a sensor or whatever, that tells the thing it's not going fast enough on takeoff, which it probably is, and it thinks it's in a stall, so it wants to put the nose down during the takeoff run where you're pretty darn close to the ground, which is not a good idea. And there appears to be some workaround from the pilot that when that happens, he's supposed to immediately flip off whatever it is that's on, override it, and then fly it up to where it's higher and turn it back on again. I think is what I've been reading, if you cross all these stories together. And that they're essentially, you turn off this particular system, but it's not as simple as turning off the autopilot system, which probably isn't on anyway, on takeoff. But the idea is that somehow or another everybody isn't either trained to do this or doesn't go through it or whatever. And that to me is kind of an odd, that's a little dangerous. And I was saying earlier, and I don't know if your son would agree to me, I want to know how many times this has happened and the pilots have essentially overridden it. We know there's been two crashes, but if that's the only two times it happened, I feel a lot differently than if it happened 100 other times, and those 98 times, the pilots were able to make a save, essentially. Now, if it's happening, like, all the time, then these things got to be grounded, I would think.
Grounded and fixed. There were reports that I saw last night, that two or three pilots that said they had to turn it off, override it.
Yeah, well, if it's happening like that, you can't count on that kind of skill from these guys, I don't think. I mean, at every single spot, especially when you're delivering these things worldwide, and who the hell knows who's flying them? Which isn't to say that the pilots from Ethiopian Airlines aren't trained enough. I mean, obviously, they haven't gone down yet. And one guy had a whole bunch of hours, and the one guy was pretty new. But, yeah, I just, anyway. So what do you think, well, we still have you, Russell. What's the scoop with the education, the market? What are you telling your people? What are you telling people about the turnaround in the Fed? What do you make of the world right now from a professorial standpoint?
Gosh, what do I think of the world right now? That's a pretty broad question. Everybody, you know, I'm at the Futures Industry Association conference. Everybody here, it's almost like everybody stopped and watched the Brexit result yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, we all pretty much knew what it was going to be. So that's really kind of the big fixation right now. I think it's distracting from a lot of other things.
Did they think
maybe that's what we always need, is a good distraction.
Are you surprised that she didn't gain like one vote or two votes?
No, and the reason, and this was the consensus around here, is each of these votes is, you know, there's 3 days of voting in row, and nobody had any incentive to change because this thing wasn't good. That yesterday wasn't going to pass. I think that was kind of the consensus. Today might be more of the coin flip.
Well, if you want, come back, because you're sounding a lot better. Come back after the break and give us an explanation of what exactly a no deal Brexit would be. I mean, Frank and I would love to hear it, and so I think everybody else.
It's kind of like when the husband goes out for cigarettes and you never see him again.
Well, so you take your British. Where does your British passport?
I'll let you get a
break. The British passport? Then you're gonna get stopped at every border, right? Was that gonna happen like right away? And I'll let you answer the question. We can have SP futures up 775, NASDAQ futures up 28. We got Boeing now only down $1.71. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. It might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do at PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Lord, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. She was Jessica Zalewski, Jay-Z on the board. We also have Mr. Frank and Mr. Russell with us. S&P futures up 775. S&P futures up 2750. Looks like we're going to be up again today. Not exactly sure why, but we are up this week. Just not sure why we were down last week, but that's what we do now. Boeing only down 140. Around, down up 42. Around the rest of the world, we've got, well, I'll do Asia first. Nikkei down 213. These guys are up and down based on sort of, a lot of what's going on with the, China deal, but they've been up mostly. They're down 213 last night, 1%. Shanghai, down 33, 1.1%, but still over 3,000. 3,026, which is kind of a benchmark high. They've been over for a little while now. Hang Seng down 113.4%, 28,807 is a full number there over in Europe. Slow but to the upside. DAX up 2, call that flat. FTSE up 19.3%, CAC around up 20.4%. We've got a rally in oil again. Oil up 63 cents, 57.50. Trying to make it back towards 60. Be interesting to see if it makes that. It's 1.1%. Brent up 41 cents. The spread is now, I'm going to say $9.42. Natural gas, 277, so nothing going on there. RBOB, another penny up, $1.83 now. So you go to the gas station, you better bring a few more shekels, as they say. Gold up 940, 1307, blasting back to 1300. Russell, today's a good day for your gold stuff. I'm sure you're a guy with about 1,000 Krugerrands in the basement, too. You're that kind of guy. Silver up 8 cents. Jay-Z, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Thanks, Chief. Good morning, everyone. The time is now 7:35. It is raining here in Chicago today. You can expect that all morning with a little break here in the middle of the day. Wow.
That was somebody.
Yeah, I think we lost Russell. Anyway, I'll answer that in a second. And more showers here tonight. Today's high is 57, low of 41. Phoenix is cloudy today with a high of 65, low of 42. In basketball, the Bulls lost to the Lakers, 123-107, and the Suns were up. In NCAA, St. Mary's beat Gonzaga 60-47, and in hockey, the Coyotes beat the Blues 3-1. Blackhawks were off, and only one accident to report on Randolph and Jefferson involving a pedestrian causing some delays. Back to you.
Certainly a delay for a pedestrian, I'm thinking.
You got that right.
So we have Frank. Frank, how are you? Do we have Frank? Do we have Russell?
Where do we have Norman? Yeah, I'm here.
Russell's back.
I heard three loud beeps and a hang up.
We thought that was you. Anywho, so explain to us. I know from the person we had on the show that I always say bad things about. I know that the Brussels people were going to make it as painful as possible for the people in Britain. Is there a danger that they went too far? And what happens if they did?
You mean as far as the hard Brexit?
All of a sudden they're just out and screw you guys.
The EU's going to fight with them? I could go both ways on that one. Your politician buddy that you talked about in the first half that said that the people didn't know what was good enough for them or didn't know what was good for them because it wasn't explained properly. I feel like guys like that will probably want to teach them a lesson.
Yes. Oh, without a doubt.
As long as it doesn't hurt their people, and that's where I think you start to get a balance. And they've had a couple of years to think about it, so the initial angry at the British voters maybe has subsided somewhat. Some of the things I've read, it looks like they may be preparing for the hard Brexit because the UK is saying that they're going to cut tariffs for like a year to help their people out on a lot of things that are input into manufacturing, not necessarily manufactured goods. And they kind of have things worked out already with at least you're not going to have to show your passport to go in and out of Ireland, for better or worse.
Okay.
But there's probably going to be an awful lot of chaos around what happens to you at Heathrow the day after or something like that, because you do have a line for the people that are EU and a line that's for everybody else, and maybe the everybody else lines are going to suddenly become much bigger.
So if I get my Irish
the freedom of movement thing, I think is going to be one of the more logistically difficult things. As far as I can tell you that everybody that I've spoken to at the conference that I'm at, and this is like a truly international group here, their firms are ready for they're ready for Brexit.
No matter what form, how can you be ready for?
No matter
all
what form,
really?
Because they've opened up. They've got a presence in the EU now.
Okay.
They've opened up an office, even if it's just a satellite office to. Maintain or to satisfy the letter of the law to continue to operate in the EU. Depending on what you do, you put people in either Paris, Germany, or maybe Amsterdam.
All right, so let me get this straight. Maybe you can answer, maybe you can't. In terms of people, I know you could basically bleep with the people and all of a sudden make them sit through a line and piss them off because they voted that way if you want to. But at the end of the day, you want the British tourists or wherever they are in the rest of Europe, or else your people are going to be squealing. Hey, I had 1,000 people from London last month in my Normandy tour. And now I had 200. You idiots better figure this out, or I'm voting you out. I mean, there'll be a backlash. But the thing I honestly don't understand, and I'm hoping to get one of you guys, why there's a change in the financial piece, because the pound was never a euro anyway. So I don't understand why all of a sudden I have to put my stock exchange guy in Paris when I always had a problem between the pound and the euro dollar. That hasn't changed. Why? What's changed there?
At a very high level, right now is London. London is part of the EU as far as financial regulations go.
Right.
And the EU has this system of reciprocity. It's a word that I have a hard time with.
Right.
But they recognize other developed markets, and so if you're in the EU, you've got no problem whatsoever buying and selling stocks on the New York Stock Exchange. The United States hits their level of financial regulation, and they feel like everything's okay with investing in the U.S.
after Brexit, Britain loses that.
Right. So
they've started to create some workarounds for it, but it goes both ways. So it's possible if you have a brokerage account in London that if no action whatsoever was taken to bridge all of this, the day after a hard Brexit, you might not be able to trade the same way that you were able to the day before.
All right, I don't want to go too deep.
So even though it's different currencies, it really comes down to the way that they integrate the overall financial system.
All right, well, I don't want to go too deep in this, maybe too late on that. But
yeah, I'm trying not to.
Well, but I mean, I'm sort of...
Well, no, because it really gets...
Well, this is one of those things, Russell and Frank and Jay-Z, that everybody, if you watch TV, everybody wants to give you the 30-second explanation on essentially how to replace somebody's heart, you know, which isn't a 30-second story. This isn't a 30-second story either. This is pretty mm-hmm. deep. Now, my question is, if somebody, just so people understand where I'm coming from, if somebody from Paris wanted to buy stock at New York Stock Exchange right now, just like if you came to PTI and wanted to buy stock on the Toronto Stock Exchange, it's a two-step transaction. We're going to buy the stock,
yeah,
and oh, by the way, you're also going to have to take the dollar and buy the Canadian dollar, and you're going to have to pay for it in Canadian dollars. So you have two risks. You have a currency risk and a stock risk. So if you're from Paris, you go to the New York Stock Exchange. Now, if you were Italy or Paris, it's the same transaction because you're talking about a euro dollar. So if Italy if Italy left and somehow went back and turned the lira press on and went back to the lira, I could see where this would be a goat bleep for like quite a while. But I don't see.
Oh, yeah. If you forced a country out or a country to quit and
but I don't
do
see,
their own currency, yeah.
I don't see how Russell, sitting in London, Russell's cousin in the cardigan in London, wants to buy 1,000 shares of IBM today. And he always had to take the transaction from the pound into the dollar, not the euro.
Yeah.
So what has changed for him today? The New York Stock Exchange is not going to close to him.
The U.S. has already said that we're going to maintain status quo with Britain if they hard Brexit.
Right.
Our regulators have worked with their regulators to make sure that's okay.
Right. I mean, I can't believe that it isn't.
But it's more of, and it doesn't have to do with somebody in Paris buying in the U.S. It's somebody in Paris trading on the London Stock Exchange or somebody in London trading on Eurex. There are big changes that are going to need to be made to the regulatory structure for people just to be able to smoothly do that in the same way that they had done it before.
See, I honestly think this is my...
That's one of the big concerns. But they've been working through it, but in one of the workarounds is you put a person... You know, it's like back in the day, you'd get really, really cheap commissions if you had somebody on the floor.
Right.
And it was worth owning a seat. It's kind of like that.
Okay.
It's like instead of owning a seat, all the big banks that only really had a London presence now have a small presence in Frankfurt or Paris or Amsterdam, depending on which one works best for the goals they're trying to achieve. The CBOE's stock market, their European stock market, is based in London. A few months ago, they created a presence in Amsterdam so their European stock market can continue to run in the same way that it was running when it was based in London.
I don't think the Europeans. Why do I get this feeling? Maybe I'm always an underdog kind of guy, but I get the feeling if the Europeans push this too hard, that there's enough stuff going on in London, they could be like the Russian in Hunt for Red October, where you know the guy said, "You were going to ask, you killed us." You know, I'm wondering if. If all of a sudden they totally disrupt stock trading between London and Paris because they say, okay, we're not going to do pound versus euro, which they've done now for however many years.
It's the other part.
Okay, but I'm saying the currency makes it a hell of a lot easier, and these transactions have been being done daily. It's almost on them to stop them. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But where if it was one of the other countries left,
it's not the currency. Yeah. It's really not the currency part. It's more of the regulatory and the clearing part, that the unfun stuff that we don't ever see. That stuff is where you could end up with a lot of issues because of the change in status of Britain relative to where they were as part of the EU.
What I'm trying to get to here, and I think you're answering it properly. Sometimes I stumble around with my questions. Think of it this way: if it was Italy, and all of a sudden the Italians wanted the same entrance with the lira, somebody would essentially have to do a bunch of stuff to turn the switch on. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying, the back and forth between the continent and Britain, because the currency was different, has already been sort of taken care of for a long time. Brussels would effectively have to turn the switch off. And I don't know if they got the balls to do that, is where I'm getting to.
Yeah, I don't think they're not going to turn the switch off as far as the cross-border transactions go, but the regulatory structure behind those transactions is going to, it's not set up. So they're going to have to recreate something that maybe was in place before Britain joined the EU, which is extremely antiquated in the financial market terms. But that what I'm telling you about is really the biggest concern of the people in our industry. And we probably focus too much, we probably think of ourselves as being very self-important and essential to the operations of the world. Personally, I think things will be fine if there's a week or so where we've got to sort out exactly how things work once with Britain outside of the EU.
I'm gonna guess
and
if we
people are preparing. CEOs are making sure that they are prepared for the worst case scenario, because you don't want to be the guy that wasn't prepared when you had 2 years to get ready.
I have a feeling that this is just a bet. You buying versus me, not that we're arguing, that if the three of us, we'll even take Jay-Z, we ducked in behind the veil over at the series with our Fed buddies, that's what they do, is concern themselves with clearing of stocks and options and making sure it's all smoothing. I would bet you that they would tell us, unless Brussels makes it a problem, it's not a problem. And I'll be willing to bet you one beer on
no,
that.
No, because I've talked to the same kind of people, but on the CFTC end, and it's just the regulatory process takes some time,
right?
And this one is sneaking up on them, so I think they're going. And the other thing that regulatory agencies can do is they can tell you they can issue statements, basically no action statements,
right,
that say what you're doing right now is okay. And I have a funny feeling that when you say Brussels turns the switch off, it really comes down to, would the financial regulators on the continent issue whatever their version of a no action letter is.
Right, because what I'm saying is...
You know what I'm saying? Saying, okay, we're going to continue just to make sure things keep running. Keep doing it. This makes sense. This is to the spirit of what the previous laws were, what we think the spirit of future laws will be. But I personally, speaking to people in the industry, I think everybody is prepared for the worst case scenario, because again, you don't want to be the guy that wasn't prepared for the worst case scenario.
All right. You
sure don't want to be scrambling around today when if they say hard Brexit, you've got 2 weeks to have everything in place.
Okay. Now, page two, Paul Harvey. How many people down there at your high-end conference? By the way, I used to go to those conferences when I was high-end.
You used to go to the FIA?
I used to go to the risk management. I don't know if I ever went to the futures industry. I did when I was in Chicago. We used to have a booth there, in fact. Anyway.
Yeah, this is their big one.
All right, how many people...
Similar to one in Chicago.
How many people down there yesterday were... Of the high end people you're hanging with, not the hoi polloi, the other guys, were hauled out yesterday in cuffs because of the college admission entrance cheating scam.
Well, I called my wife and told her to pull the plug on what we were working on.
Yes.
That's all. Personally, I know that. That's it.
I know you're a professor someplace. Is there many schools that we know of that are going to all of a sudden have a problem here? I know that, as mentioned earlier, and you and Kevin obviously are in academia. But Frank knows, or Gene Marabito, who's a director of admissions for Michigan, she will tell you that, you know, 500 of the people that they turned down, it's not like they couldn't go to school there and do well and get a degree. I mean, it's
might be more like 5,000.
Well, it could be. Well, you'll be. Then again, then you get in a mix of how many of the top people have 15 applications out there and are going to say no anyway. That's why what a lot of schools have done. By the way, has Loyola done this? Where when they approve you, they give you some kind of an early approval, and if you promise not to apply anywhere else and tell them yes, there's some advantage to you. Is Loyola doing that? I know a lot of the other schools are.
I really don't know much about the admissions process at Loyola.
Well, what's happening?
My
here?
Younger son, Tom, got a bucket.
Is that what they call it?
At a D3 school. And it was under the understanding that he would not apply elsewhere.
Because I think it's happening
an
everywhere.
Athletic bucket.
Okay. I mean, so if is it tied to like aid or something, or is it just. What's it tied to?
He went to a school that replaced all loans with grants.
Okay.
Which is, so he ended up getting more than if he had been a far better athlete and gone to a D1 school.
Okay. So.
Amazing.
So what they're trying to do is get, when you got 5,000 of them sitting in front of you and you know 2,000 have no intention of going there unless everybody else tells them no, at least it tries to get that 2,000 off the mix. So you're only dealing with people that actually want to come to your place. Is that the thought process here?
Yeah, well, part of it is. And also, a lot of baseball players do that because D1 only has 11.7 scholarships.
Okay.
So you'll get a 90-mile-an-hour fastball may get you a quarter scholarship because you have to divide it up over 4 years. But if you go to Williams or Amherst, it'll basically give you a full ride if your old man makes less than a couple hundred thou a year.
Well, I'm going to say that for the Irish, does any of the baseball players get a full ride? I'm going to say I doubt it.
Now, I have a nephew that was a 93-mile-an-hour pitcher that only got a half scholarship, and that was considered amazing.
Yeah, the only people who get the full rides are football, basketball, and does hockey even get them?
I don't know. But there is another place if you want to go D3. Go to one of the Little Ivies or a Nescaq school.
What about the one up by Dr. J's parents' place on the St. Croix River? They won last year, didn't they? The national. There's like a.
There's a hockey school in Minnesota. I can't think of it off the top of my head either.
Well, St. Norbert's gets it a lot.
It
wins.
Yeah.
No, this was. It wasn't Minnesota Duluth. It was somebody else. Minnesota St. Croix or Minnesota somebody and somebody. And they won, I think, last year. If they didn't, they came in like second or third. Anyway, it's how much down the. I mean, it doesn't surprise me that people are out there for hire to say, hey, say your kid played golf at Marist. Who the hell's going to know? I mean, to teach people how to put these applications together because they're obviously looking for excuses to tell people no. Just. We didn't need this in our day, Frank and I. Maybe in your day, Russell, you're a little younger, but it doesn't surprise me that there's people out there to hold themselves out as shall we say, agents to help people get into college to write the application correctly. But these guys clearly went further than that, huh?
Oh, a lot of people have their letters of intent or their essays written by third parties.
So why do people... make people write essays if they know that's happening. I mean, come on. I mean,
no, I agree with you.
Most schools, the Common App has taken the essay away, but you can send in an essay as an addendum to almost any application.
When I applied to University of Chicago, there was a spot for an essay on the application, but it had to be in longhand, and you filled the application out in longhand. So I think they would have known right away, unless you copied one from somebody, that it wasn't yours, or at least...
Well, that's what you do. Yeah. You have somebody write it for you, and you copy it.
Well, but at least...
Jeez, Tom.
I know, but I got that part, but I'm saying at least you had to... It's not like you sent in one from a computer, you know, here I did this type of thing. You at least had to write the damn thing out on there.
Well, it's not like you fill out one application and hit send to 15 schools at once.
Well, yeah, that, in our day that didn't happen.
That's what they do.
Well, that's why I stopped at two, because I got tired of writing them. I didn't want to fill out more than two. Because then I, me being the lazy guy that I always was, the idea, how long would it have taken, Frank, in our day for somebody to do like 25 applications? It would have been like a month.
Oh, or if you have a writing disability like me, it would have taken you 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. How many did you apply to, Russell, when you went to college?
I applied to 3.
Yeah, I did, too.
Got shot down by 2 of the 3.
No, who shot you down? Why would anybody? Where? Let me add them.
Georgia Tech. You're going to love this. Georgia Tech and Loyola Chicago.
You're kidding.
Oh, wow.
So where did you go? Slippery Rock?
No, I went to Memphis.
I knew that. Did you? Were you?
Yeah, right.
Were you Derrick Rose's roommate?
They take everybody.
Were you Derrick Rose's roommate?
Well, Derrick Rose had to cheat to get in.
Well...
So now,
to qualify for an NCAA.
Right, so now you're a professor at Loyola.
Yeah, I've actually seen what he did, and we can talk about that some other day. Person misspelled his name on the SAT thing.
Oh God!
And they had it was the 5th try, and they had the other 4, and the handwriting was completely. That's what they do, is they compare the handwriting on the stuff that you have to fill out at the beginning. But they misspelled his name and. It had, and it the handwriting was completely different. I think they may have gotten his address wrong as well, or something like that.
I have to ask a question.
How do you misspell Rose?
Yeah, how do you misspell Rose?
No, it was the first name.
Oh,
yeah, it was like 1 R or something like that. But it was pretty obvious.
I have to ask, when they hired you as a professor at Loyola, did you pull out the flush letter and say times have changed?
No, but I have a really good time telling my students that they didn't let me in. They think it's hilarious.
Oh, I do too.
I tell them that I hate all of them because they got in and I didn't.
I assume you still have the flush letter.
No, I don't have that.
Well, I would have kept that. Oh, God, I would never have thrown that out. Especially if
it just shows the imperfection of the admissions process.
You know what? I wouldn't have taken me either.
Yes, you would have. That's me futures.
Seriously, back then I wouldn't have taken me either. So
well, thank you guys. S&P futures up 550. NASDAQ futures up 21.
Bye guys.
Boeing up 356. Wow. We'll be back tomorrow. Stacks and Jacks. Good job, Jay Z.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.